Hello, everybody. This is Paul Douglas Boyer. You're listening to the Mad Money Machine Show 135, sometime after November 13th or 14th, or maybe much, much later than that. I'd like to welcome all new listeners to the show. We'll try to get you caught up as to what's going on here on the Mad Money Machine. And for you longtime listeners, I know some of you have listened to every single episode. Thank you very much. On this episode, we're going to talk about new banks. We're going to talk about Circuit City. We're going to talk about Smith & Wesson. We're going to talk about 3X Bear ETFs, the G20 meeting. We'll have a spin at the Guru Roulette Wheel. We'll pull something out of the Mad Money Machine tool crib. And we'll talk about some cool stuff for the iPhone. And we'll also talk about dividends. Should we buy into Cramer's thesis and buy high dividend paying stocks now?
Mad Money Machine is brought to you by Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com. Helping investors succeed by matching people with portfolios.
Let me just catch up the new listeners for a moment, if you don't mind, longtime listeners. Just take 30 seconds or so. This show started out as a kind of a critique, a review of Jim Cramer's stock picks. Along the way, I discovered that index funds was the best way to invest. We pull heavily on the materials from Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com. I believe wholeheartedly in the scientific approach they have to investing. And I believe that everyone should take their risk capacity survey to see how they should invest their assets. I believe you should read their book called Index Funds, the 12-Step Program for Active Investors. But I am not an employee of Index Funds Advisors. I'm a hobbyist podcaster who studies investing as one of my three full-time jobs, I'd have to say at this point. My other two being personal trainer for myself and private investor for myself. So those are my three full-time jobs. And so the benefit, I think, to my listeners is I'm probably one of the only financial podcasters that I know of, at least. If you know of somebody else, please feel free to email me. But I am the only one that is not trying to sell something of my own. I don't have a book to sell you. I don't have a financial planning service that I run to try to bring you in and sell you. And I don't have newspapers or TV shows or magazines to try to sell you. It's just me doing this as a hobby. And I think that that should give you unbiased information. So on with the show. The FDIC bank fail count is now 19. Ah, but wait, we have a new bank. American Express is now a bank. Congratulations, I guess, American Express. You'll get government subsidies. You'll become part of the collective. You know, I went into Circuit City the other day. I was looking for an alarm clock, clock radio that holds an iPod. And I walk in the door. There's a nice young lady handing me a leaflet when I come in the front door. Welcome to Circuit City. She gives me the thing. And she says, do you have any questions? I said, well, I'm looking for a clock radio. And she kind of looked a little bit puzzled for a second and then pointed me towards somewhere in the back. See where those gentlemen are standing? That's about where they are. And so I walked around a little bit and really couldn't find it, but eventually did find the model I was looking for of the clock radio and pushed a couple of buttons to try to listen to it a little bit. Nothing came out of it. One of the salesmen walks over finally and says, can I help you? And I say, well, I'd like to hear this one. And he punches a few buttons and says, well, it doesn't look like it's plugged in. He opens up with a key, the drawer underneath. It is plugged in. The thing just doesn't work. And he kind of leaves it at that. Oh, doesn't looks like it's not working. I said, well, okay. And I walk away, and I see another clock radio not too far away. The salesman has left me by this time. I push some buttons on this other clock radio. Nothing comes out. I look under to see if it's plugged in or not. I can't see because it's hidden underneath the drawers that are locked. Salesman comes over and says, can I help you? I said, well, I'd like to listen to this clock radio. He starts punching a couple of buttons. He says, well, it doesn't look like it's plugged in. And I say, well, yeah, I guess it's not plugged in. And he kind of looks underneath it without even opening the drawer with the key this time. He says, well, doesn't look like it's working. And so I said, okay. For some reason, I walk around and I do buy a little pair of the earbud headphones for my wife and check out counter. They said, did you find everything okay? I said, well, I looked at two clock radios and neither one of them worked. And he didn't look all that surprised, but he did say, oh, really? And we went through the whole thing. And bottom line was, it was just a horrible shopping experience at Circuit City. Now, let me contrast that with Best Buy. Went in, found the section, found the clock radio. It was plugged in. I punched one button. The sound comes on. The sales lady comes over. Says, can I help you? Well, I'm interested in this clock radio. She said, that's the best one for the iPod, for the iPhone. It has the interference canceling, so you don't hear that GSM sound. And she went on and on and told me stuff that I'd already found out by researching this clock radio on the internet. And so I knew that what she was saying was accurate and wasn't just salesman hype. And what a difference between the way Best Buy is run and the way Circuit City is run. And coincidentally, the Sunday just prior to Monday when I went into Circuit City, I was sitting down. We went out to lunch with my neighbor. And for some reason, we got to talking about Circuit City. And I said, let me look at the stock price on Circuit City. I think it's below $3. And I pulled it up, and it was 25 cents a share of Circuit City stock. The next day, though, it went down to 10 cents. And then, of course, the next day, it effectively, I think, has gone down to zero. They've declared bankruptcy. And the stock, as far as I know, is worthless. I type in the ticker symbol CC. Nothing comes up. Perhaps they changed it to some other tickle symbol. But wow, poor Circuit. Now, the funny thing, though, too, is the Circuit City store in our town is probably the very last Circuit City store that was opened. It just opened a couple of months ago. And you'd think that the thing would be well run, nicely stocked. It just seemed like a store that was going out of business the first day it opened. And it hadn't gotten any better. Poor Circuit City, you were once great. Best Buy, hope you learned some lessons there from the way not to run a business. Another store that I went into recently is my local gun store. What is going on with guns? I'm hearing stories everywhere that guns are flying off the shelves. They cannot keep ammunition in stock. And it's been in the last couple of weeks, right around Election Day. What is going on in the gun market? What in the world is going on in the gun market? Why are people panic buying guns? And you look at Smith & Wesson stock, it's kind of way down along with the rest of the stock market, although it bounced off the bottom a few days ago, and perhaps they're thinking that the earnings of some of these gun and ammunition companies will temporarily trend higher. But let's see, the guy in the store, what was his story? There was one guy that came in, and he says, the salesman says, can I help you? And the guy says, well, I'm looking to buy two guns, and I don't want to spend more than $700. The guy says, all right. And what are you looking for? He said, well, I'd like a Glock handgun, and I'd like to get some sort of shotgun. And so he was right there at the Glock counter. There's all different kinds of models of these handguns, and they're numbered there's a G20 and a G21 and a G25 and a G30 and all this sort of stuff. And it supposedly is a very simple gun that's extremely reliable. It's so few parts, something like 30 parts in the gun, that it's very easy to take the thing apart and put it back together even. And then they went over to the shotgun rack, and the salesman asked the guy, well, what are you looking to use the shotgun for? He said, well, basically protection, have around the house. And the salesman said, well, here's a good one. It's used. It's kind of scratched up, but the incisor is still good. And he said, at one point he said, now listen to this. Chink-chink. You know that sound when you pump the shotgun? He said, a lot of times you don't even need to have ammunition in the gun. If somebody's in your house, you just make that sound and they know what's going on. Well, I don't know what's going on in the gun market, but they seem to be panic buying right now, just as there's panic selling in the stock market. How do you make money when everything is going down? One idea that I'm playing with that I mentioned the past couple of shows is these bear market exchange-traded funds. I've talked about SKF, which is the 2X Bear Financial Fund. And by the way, I don't have a lot of money in this. This is my Mad Money account, right? This is just a little game that I'm playing, basically, with a tiny little bit of money. Certainly not my retirement money, although it's in a retirement account. So I'm kind of contradicting what I say there. I'm trading in a retirement account so that I don't have to pay taxes on any capital gains that I hope to realize at some point. And then I talked about SDS, which is the 2X inverse S&P 500 fund. These all make money when the stock market goes down. Now, there's a new set of exchange-traded funds that have come out. These are the 3X, three times either inverse or positive correlated exchange-traded funds. There's one, FAZ is the ticker symbol on it. It is the 3X Bear Financial Exchange-Traded Fund. So when the financial index goes down 1%, this exchange-traded fund is designed to go up 3%. And so the other day, this exchange-traded fund, by the way, has only been around for about a week. So I thought I would play with a little bit of this fund. What is today? Thursday, Wednesday, Tuesday then. About 2 o'clock or so in the afternoon, I bought it, just a tiny little bit of this thing, FAZ. And wouldn't you know it, immediately after I bought it, which is typical for everything that I ever do in trading, is why I don't recommend trading, the thing goes down. Down, down, down. Probably went down about 10%. You know, this thing is highly leveraged. Up until about 2:30, 3 o'clock, and then started recovering a little bit. And I think for the day, it ended about flat. Fortunately, I got back to even money on this fund. The next day, though, yesterday, Wednesday, the S&P 500, as you know, went down about 5%. And this exchange-traded fund gained 19% on the day. And I wish I could claim victory. I don't know what's going to happen today. I have a feeling that the S&P is going to bounce back off its lows, which is going to wipe out any gains that I had in this thing. But it just gives me a little bit of comfort. It's like a cushion that says, I can't stand everything in the entire markets of everything going down. Please give me some life preserver. Give me something to hold on to that goes up. I just want to see some green. I want to see some green somewhere in my portfolio screen after looking at everything that is red for so very long. And so we'll see how well this 3X exchange-traded fund does. Now, y'all have to know that the expense ratio on the thing is 0.95%, which is pretty darn high. They get in there and they do a whole lot of, it's actually a lot of derivatives trading basically on these exchanges. And we know what trouble derivatives have gotten us into in the past. Well, tomorrow, the next day, Saturday, is November the 15th. And what is significant about November the 15th, if you're listening to me on or about that date, that's the date when the G20 meet. Apparently, the heads of state of the big 20 industrialized nations are all going to get together, probably somewhere in D.C., although the best place they should meet would be in Bretton Woods, because they're going to talk about the global financial summit and what to do about the world economy. Isn't it great that we've got people, just 20 or so people 100 or so people that are making the decisions as to how the entire global economy should work and how it should operate. Isn't it fantastic that we've got these knowledgeable, these wonderful sage people that have all-knowing, all-powerful, and we give them all the power and all the money to make decisions on how the economy should be run. Just a wonderful, comfortable, comforting feeling that these people in charge are making the decisions for all of the rest of us. Sarcasm off. At the G20 meeting, what are we going to look forward to? You know, some of the real pessimistic people are saying that this is the start of a major shift in the global financial structure. I haven't heard anybody talking about replacing all of the world's currencies with a dollar. You know, I've heard people talking about things like a one world currency, but they never talk about that currency being the dollar. And I don't see why it wouldn't be nominated as the candidate to be the world's currency. You just replace the euro, replace the yuan, replace the real, replace everything with this massively centralized, controlled currency that they just continue to inflate and inflate and inflate forever. Let's play a round of the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of investment gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll the roll. And for the selected guru, I'll give you a little background on investment philosophy. So here we go. And a winner this time on Mad Money Machine Show 135 is you, the listener. Yeah, congratulations on being named guru on the Mad Money Machine Show 135. You, the listener, are trying to find your way through this rough financial market. And you're coming to the Mad Money Machine to try to get answers as to how you should invest for the long term. And notice you're not coming to the Mad Money Machine on what stocks to buy, how to trade stocks, because you've figured out by listening to the Mad Money Machine that buying and holding index funds for the long term is the best approach. It saves you expenses. It saves you management fees. It saves you capital gains costs, as if we had any capital gains taxes, right? And we know that passive investing is the best approach. Now, we also know, remember, though, that index funds includes not just stock index funds, although that's what we've been focused on for much of the duration of the show for the past 3 years. Remember, we started out as a critique of Jim Cramer, who never talks about fixed income or bonds. So we've been focusing on the equity side, the growth side. We haven't been focusing as much on the bond side. And that's a shame because we should have. That's the ballast in the portfolio. I've talked about in the past how Portfolio 90 is the all-stock portfolio at Index Funds Advisors. And when you start adding fixed income into your portfolio, you basically have a smaller set of Portfolio 90 and a larger set of the bond portfolios. So as you get down to, say, 85, you basically have a Portfolio 90 with a little bit of bonds in it. Portfolio 80, you basically have that same Portfolio 90, but with a little bit more bonds in it. All the way down to Portfolio 5, which has Portfolio 90 in it and a whole lot of bonds. In fact, it has 15% equities and 85% fixed income. That's the least risky portfolio at Index Funds Advisors. Now, I've talked in the past about how there could be people were in the early 2007 when the stock market was doing nothing but going up. People wanted even more risk. They wanted to make more gain on their investments. We talked about how could we get a portfolio 120 maybe or a 150. And, you know, investing more in, say, emerging markets or more in REITs or more in international stocks. We didn't talk about how we weren't interested at all in talking about how could we get a portfolio zero or portfolio one, and where you reduce your equity exposure down to zero. And which even for, you know, retirees, I've heard on the Sound Investing Show, for example, they talk about even retirees should have some equities in order to have the long-term growth. Well, you, the listener, are with me trying to learn how we navigate these markets. And I know a lot of people have a question about what I'm doing in the markets. And I don't know why you should be concerned about what I'm doing other than to say, do I practice what I preach? And there was one comment at a drop.io that claims that I do not practice what I preach. It says, just tell your listeners whether you can say yes to the following four things. 1, 2, 3, 4. Number one, do you invest with IFA? And I've told people on the show before that no, I do not invest in IFA. If I were a client of IFA and were talking about them on this show, that would, in the eyes of the SEC, be a, quote, testimonial and is against their regulations and would get into trouble. Instead, IFA is an advertiser, and as you can tell by watching CNBC, advertising is still allowed. Nonetheless, I do fully believe in IFA's approach. Otherwise, I wouldn't be talking about them. Now, can anyone refute any of the advice they give? I doubt it. Question number two. Have you disposed your single stock holdings and invested the money into index funds? And I've talked about the three single stocks that I still own in tiny, tiny amounts. I mean, I don't think this goes against my investing philosophy at all by still holding these things. Although it might be a good time to sell them because, for example, Southern Copper Corporation that I bought 2 or 3 years ago, it was up at one point 160%. And I didn't want to sell it and pay all the capital gains taxes on it. So I said, just hold it. Well, I don't have to worry about capital gains taxes anymore on it. So lucky me. So I might sell that one now. That might be a good one to sell and watch it rocket back up. But it's good to practice what I preach and get out of the individual stock there. The other two that I hold, one is one share. I hold one share of Berkshire Hathaway B, the cheapy version of Berkshire Hathaway. And I bought that thing, back in 2005, I think, just so I could get the annual reports in the mail. I wanted to be on the list. Maybe eventually one day I'll go to his Woodstock out in Omaha, Nebraska. But that's why I hold one share of Berkshire B. And the other stock that I own still, and I have bought this thing probably in early 90s, is just a few shares of Microsoft. Not enough to do a whole lot with, but I still hold that, and I wish I would have sold it at 29 or 30. I think it's bobbling around about 20, 21 these days. There's no particular reason why I continue to own that, and probably should sell it. It would clean off my portfolio listings. I wouldn't have to look at it all the time. Question three. Do you invest in index funds based on your risk capacity? Oh, it reminds me further about question number two. Have I put the money into index funds? Yes. At the moment, I'm in bond index funds. And so let me go on to question three. Do you invest in index funds based on your risk capacity? And he says he or she. I think it's a he. Most listeners are he. Remember that even Portfolio 5 has 15% in non-fixed income index funds. And I have taken the risk capacity survey. I've talked about my low risk capacity because I am more into the distribution phase of my income life cycle. But I believed, just to be completely truthful on this one, I believe that I am invested a bit below my actual risk capacity number at the moment. And I guess it's because I'm a coward. But I made a posting on the website back in March, and I have a link to it at drop.io. I'll put a link to it in the show notes too. It's called Where Do We Run When the Dark Clouds Come? And if you haven't read that and you're trying to figure out whether I practice what I preach or not, you need to go and read that posting. I talk about the dynamically adjusted risk capacity. I talk about should we just stay and take a beating or should we run and hide? And the conclusion I came to back in March, and actually a little bit earlier, back last December, was I think I should run and hide. And I'll explain why that's not market timing in a moment. Remember what Mark Hebner says about when should you sell your stocks? There's two times that you should sell your stocks. One is when you need the money. And the other one is when you lose your faith in capitalism. And I make an argument in this posting that I need my money. I don't want to lose my money, so I'm going to sell. And you'd think, well, that's just playing with words. That's being Bill Clinton and playing with words and redefining the meaning of words and things. I say, all right, let's go on to number two then. When you lose your faith in capitalism. And if there's ever a time in the past 50 years when you might question the efficacy of capitalism, not pure capitalism, but regulated, government-regulated capitalism, well, this would have been a good time to question that. And that's what I did. I questioned capitalism. And that's why I wrote that posting, "Where do we run when the dark clouds come?" Question number four, do you avoid market timing? Yes, I avoid market timing for my investments. And as I mentioned, I'm having a little fun with my mad money, my tiny little mad money account at the moment. I bought that FAZ. But at the end of this segment, after the end of this segment, I want to explain the difference between market timing and DARC, which stands for Dynamically Adjusted Risk Capacity. I believe there is a significant difference, enough to say market timing is bad, DARC is good. And by the way, at the end of the show when I say stay invested, don't think that I mean stay invested in stocks exclusively. Bonds are an investment. Cash is an investment. And gold is not so much an investment as a hedge against movements in the currency. But listening to the show is an investment of your time. And I appreciate the fact that you do listen. And remember, bond index funds are index funds too. And so to the poster at drop.io/madmoneymachine, here's a question back at you. What have I ever said that is not true or correct? Now, I mean, I certainly do make mistakes. Like at one point earlier, back in March, and when I wrote that posting, I thought the dollar would continue to drop. I mean, I thought this was it, folks. I thought the Fed is now printing money. That's inflation. It's going to cause prices of everything to go up because the dollar value goes down because there's more of them, right? Well, not being a professional economist, I didn't understand at the time that everyone was selling their assets to get into the dollar. Not only in the United States, but in countries all around the world. They wanted dollars. They wanted to get out of their euros, and they wanted to get out of their Zimbabwe dollars and their reals. They wanted the safety, the strength of the world's reserve currency, the dollar, and demand for the dollar went up and up and up, and they wanted to get out of everything else. They wanted to get out of their gold. They wanted to get out of their oil. They wanted to get out of their stocks. They wanted to get out of REITs, and they want to get into the dollar, and that means the prices of everything have been going down, even commodities. Well, so I didn't anticipate this massive deflation that we've had. And I've talked about the tsunami recently and how I think that this deflation is a prelude to inflation sometime later. But I don't know when that's going to happen. I don't think it's going to be next week. I don't know if it's going to be next month or next year or 2 years or 5 years or possibly 10 or 20 years. I really don't. I have no idea. But I think it's going to happen. So I ask you, what have I said that's not true or is incorrect? I continue to think that I'm the most unbiased financial podcaster on the internet. I do not think that any of the advice that the folks at IFA provide about investing is incorrect. I believe everything they're saying out there. And I continue to encourage you to go look at Index Funds Advisors at IFA.com website. I think now would be a fantastic time to open an account with them. Most of you are in your accumulation phase. Stocks are on sale. You're going to be able to look back on this 20 years from now and say, my goodness, what a fantastic buying opportunity it was in 2008, 2009, 2010. Look how well we've done on our investments since then. For those of us in the distribution phase, though, we've got to pay our mortgage. And if I had to sell my stocks today to pay off my mortgage, I would be sad. Instead, I'm kind of glad. I sold some stocks in December. I sold some stocks again in March. I've kept track of how they've done since that time. And I have saved about 26% from loss so that I can pay my mortgage. And I'm pretty happy about that. Those of you in the accumulation phase, though, you're looking out 10, 12, 20 years from now. I can't see why you'd be interested in stock prices being high. Why would you want stock prices to be high now? You want them to be high later when you need to take the money out. You want it to be high later when you need to pay your mortgage. So for me, this podcast is a paying hobby, and I continue to do it because I think I'm pretty good at it. Putting together an entertaining, informative show. I continue to do it, fueled by the many positive emails I get from you, the guru, on show 135, The Listener. And I do it because it helps my mind keep focused on learning. And boy, am I learning so many things in the past 3 years that I've been doing the show. Thank you for the note. Thank you for the positive feedback. Keep it coming. And help me make the show better for you. Congratulations, you. You're the guru on Madman Machine Show 135. All right, so I want to talk a little bit about market timing versus DARC, the dynamically adjusted risk capacity. And I think there's a difference, and I think there's a significant difference. And hindsight gives a lot of clarity to this of why we do things, because finally now with hindsight, I think I can explain the difference between market timing and this dynamically adjusted risk capacity. Now, the simple explanation is market timing is bad. You can't win. DARC is good. You can't lose. With market timing, you're trying to seek alpha. You're trying to beat the market. You're trying to beat the index funds. You're trying to add to your risk so that you get higher returns, even in the face of maybe that high risk is not appropriate for you. Whereas DARC, dynamically adjusted risk capacity, is good in that you're seeking to preserve capital. You're seeking not to lose what you already have. You're not trying to beat the markets. You're trying to protect yourself from the markets. In market timing, you're listening to the news, you're studying annual reports, you're calling conference calls to try to predict changes in stocks prices so that you can buy and sell them to maximize your profit. You're trying to maximize your Sharpe ratio. You're following Jim Cramer and buying hot stock tips or selling before the company's earnings reports. And we know that individual stock trading is dumb. News drives stock prices, and news, by definition, is random and unpredictable. However, the major business cycles induced by the Federal Reserve and other central banks aren't as random or unpredictable. We saw this one coming a year or so ago. Some people saw it a lot further into the past. So in DARC, you are following major reversals of the Federal Reserve-induced business cycle to avoid risk, or at least minimize your risk. You move to a higher percentage of fixed income assets to ride out the downturn and risk missing out on some possible upside. Yes, when you reduce your risk, you reduce your chance for returns. There's no doubt about it. I think most market timers are in the accumulation phase of their investment life cycle, whereas the DARC side folks are in the distribution phase, and they want to preserve their capital to the biggest extent possible. Market timing is bad. You can't win. The dark side is good. You can't lose. In the Learning Earnings segment today, brought to you by Index Funds Advisors, I want to revisit the piece that Mark Hebner at Index Funds Advisors wrote called The Resilience of Capitalism. He's updated it for November 10th. He says, now that October numbers are in, I wanted to update my discussion about the very challenging investment environment over the last 12 months and offer some much-needed perspectives. I'm sympathetic to your concerns and want to help you through this difficult time in the stock market. Many investors may find themselves questioning their ability to remain in their investments right now. If you are concerned, the first step is to review and take into consideration the proper time horizon for your investments. If your time horizon or liquidity needs have changed from the last time you took the risk capacity survey, you should take the survey again to determine if an adjustment in your index portfolio or risk exposure is necessary at this time. As a general rule of thumb, the equity allocation of your portfolio should have an approximate time horizon or holding period of 7 to 10 years. This would indicate that you should have an allocation of fixed income that will meet your withdrawal needs for approximately 5 years. So if you are withdrawing 5% per year, you should have at least 25% of your portfolio in fixed income. If you are at a point in time when you are routinely withdrawing funds from your portfolio, we recommend that you not withdraw more than 7% of your portfolio value per year. A 5% withdrawal rate is a more prudent rate. When markets have declined, you should reduce your withdrawals to as low as you can stand. In other words, cover your fixed costs and reduce your variable costs. And then he goes on to talk about the revised rolling 12 months, and that the 12 months ending October was the worst in the last 50 years or so. And I recommend that you have a look at it. I'll have a link in the show notes to his article here. In the end, he says, when the markets abruptly turn around, investors who bought and held risk-appropriate portfolios of low-cost, passively managed index funds will be in a position to benefit from the market's reaction to the unexpected news events that will once again show the resilience of capitalism. In the meantime, as long as you invest according to your risk capacity and keep your eyes fixed on your time horizon, you should do your best to ignore the media and spend your time on the things in life that you enjoy. Learning Earning, brought to you by Index Funds Advisors. Let's pull something out of the Mad Money Machine tool crib. Well, I've talked a little bit about precious metals, and I've talked a couple of shows ago or something about why is there this difference between how much a gold coin costs and an ounce of gold on the futures market, or an ounce of gold just on the exchange-traded fund, GLD. You know, you can't buy an American Eagle gold coin for the same price that you can buy 10 shares of GLD, which is kind of odd. And I talked about how the physical form of the coin does make a difference. If there's a shortage of the physical form and people have a higher demand for the physical form, then yeah, obviously the prices are going to go up on that, which kind of creates an arbitrage opportunity somewhere. I'm not sure that I'm in a position to take advantage of the arbitrage opportunity. I'd like to, you know, sell a bunch of those gold coins somehow and buy a bunch of shares of GLD and keep doing that. But there is a fun little website, and that's the tool in the crib this week. And the website is called the eBay Precious Metals Exchange. And what they do is they go out and look through the eBay listings of coins. This is in the United States. They show the number of items that have been up for auction, the number of bids on them, the total number of ounces that have been auctioned in at eBay, the bid and the sold price, high and low, and the premium then over an ounce of gold. And so, for example, a Gold Eagle 1 ounce coin, there have been 23 of them as of November 13th. The number of bids on that is 202, And this could include the same person bidding multiple times, by the way. The total number of ounces there, obviously, is 23. The bid price on it is $931. And at the moment, gold is $712 an ounce. There's this enormous premium, this 27% premium for this gold eagle coin over an ounce of gold. And so the lesson here is, if you've got something to sell, sell it on eBay, because you're going to get a pretty high premium on what it is that you've got to sell. I mean, compare taking that gold eagle into a coin shop then. I bet you, and I haven't tried this, maybe I should try this, but I bet you if you took your gold eagle 1 ounce coin into a coin shop, they'd probably try to say, well, gold's at $712 an ounce, we'll give you $700 for the coin. You know, because we got to make some money. And then you'd say, well, look, you know, there's a premium on these gold eagles. eBay was selling one for $931. You'd say, well, good luck. Try to sell it on eBay. Have fun. Yeah, take it or leave it. But this eBay Precious Metals Exchange tool that I have a link to in the show notes lists not only gold coins, but silver coins in various ounce sizes. There's even silver bullion up to 20 ounces. And they show that two of those have sold for a total ounce of 40 ounces. The bid on it and the selling price were both at about $333, whereas silver is only $9.25 an ounce. Multiply that by the 20 ounces. 10 ounces would be 92, so 20 ounces would be $180. The premium then is 80%. If you could buy silver bullion at the silver price and then sell it on eBay, you'd make 80% premium. Well, that's our tool in the crib this week, the eBay Precious Metals Exchange. And like other tools I've given you in the past, this one too is free. What is this thing that Colin Powell says is going to happen on January 21st or 22nd? Have you seen that video? He was on Meet the Press a couple of weeks ago, 3 weeks ago or something, and said, we know there's a plan, we don't know what it is, but something big is going to happen on January 21st or 22nd. I think it was a mistake. I think he must have got his words mixed up and stumbled over himself and really meant that the day after Inauguration Day will be the start of things that test the new president. And he doesn't know what that would be. He just knows that the new president's going to be tested. So I hope that that's what he means and isn't specifically saying that there's something going to happen on those 2 days specifically. Let's talk about fun things. Let's talk about the iPhone. And every year for the past few years in our family, what we did as far as giving Christmas presents to each other, we decided that everyone buying a present for everyone else is a little bit ridiculous. You know, as you add one more person into the group, the amount of gift giving would go up exponentially. And so we decided to do what many other families around the country do at Christmas, and that is put names in a hat and draw names, and you get to buy presents for one other person in the big group. That's called Secret Santa. And we actually did that. We literally put names into a little box, you know, on a piece of paper, folded up. And we didn't want to get our own spouse's name, so you would pull it out, you'd look at it, and if you got your own spouse, you throw it back in, and you pull another name out. Now, 1 year, we had a third party who would pull names for us, and they would help adjudicate this business of not getting your own spouse. Well, to our rescue comes the iPhone, and there's an application that's just out on the iPhone. I think it might be $1.99, and you know, God love them. They're getting $1.99 for a little application that they've written. It's called Secret Santa. And you put a list of all the people's names into this little application. I love this thing. You tell it whose name you cannot get. You know, you cannot get your own spouse. And you pass around the iPhone then. And you touch your name and you see who you get as your person that you give gifts to. And I guess the, you know, I haven't downloaded this and looked at it. I've just read the description of it because, by the way, we're not doing Secret Santa this year. More about that in a moment. But I guess the idea is you pass this around and you touch your name and you see who you give gifts to. And then hopefully you're able to hide who you give gifts to before you pass it to the next person. And they touch their name and they only see the one they're giving gifts to. And they can't see who's giving them the gift. That's the whole idea behind the secret. Yeah, this year we decided, and I wonder if it's the economy that's the cause of this, but we decided that we're not going to give gifts to each other. We're not going to do the Secret Santa this year. Instead, we're going to do kind of a, I think it's called a white elephant. Everybody brings one gift for the whole group that's appropriate to anybody in the group. And you kind of pick a number or something and somebody opens it up and I don't know what the rules are going to be, but I guess if somebody wants it, then they can get it and you can trade it in the whole business. So that's the first iPhone application. The second one is pretty neat. It's called the Club Cards application. You know how your wallet is starting to fill up with all of these store barcode cards. I've got one for every grocery store we go to. I've got one for various ice cream stores and all this stuff. It's just my wallet is so thick now that when I sit down, it's causing this dimple in my bottom. Well, this the iPhone Club Card application will come to the rescue. What you're able to do, supposedly, and I haven't downloaded this one yet either, according to the description, you're able to type in the number of the Club Card application, and it creates a barcode in the iPhone screen that I guess works at the checkout counter. And so they say, you've got your Club Card. You hand them your iPhone, or you hold on to it tightly as they scan the barcode that appears on the display of the iPhone. And I think it's pretty cool. I wonder if it works. Let me know if you try it and it works. I think it's 99 cents or something, too. So God love them. God love them. They're getting 99 cents. One more thing about the iPhone. People talk about the enormous power drain and how the battery life on the iPhone is so horrible. I just wonder if I've discovered something that I've missed somewhere along the way, because I only bought the iPhone, you know, within the past couple of months. It's been out for over a year. I wonder if I've missed something in this power saving idea. An application like Bloomberg, which is a very popular application, keeps track of stock prices, downloads, news, and so forth. Well, it can kind of run automatically. It can connect to a Wi-Fi connection. It can download stock prices every few minutes or something as it's connecting to this Wi-Fi signal. When you turn the display off on your iPod, let's say you bring up the Bloomberg application and you're looking at stock prices. Then you turn the display off by hitting the top button. Then you just turn the display on by hitting the home button and sliding across. Bloomberg is still running. It's still there. I wonder, is it still running the entire time that that display is turned off? And therefore, instead of just turning off the display, you should hit the home button every time before you turn off the display. And that way, Bloomberg won't be trying to connect through the Wi-Fi or through the 3G or through the Edge network to download the updated stock quotes and the updated news listings every time. I just wonder. Let me know if you agree that you need to hit the home button before you turn off the display on your iPhones. Last little thing I want to talk about. Cramer's been on this kick now about trying to find stocks to buy that have high dividends. And I've been reading a book. I've been reading lots of books. I think I have 15 books on my bookshelf. And maybe I'll make a posting on the MadMoneyMachine.com blog of the 15 books that I'm trying to get through. The problem is I don't have a priority on any one of them. I just want to read them all. One of them I'm reading is Barton Biggs's book entitled Wealth, War, and Wisdom. Kind of skimmed through a lot of it. Not really interested in the actual wars part of it. What I'm interested in more is the wealth and the wisdom part of it. One of the things that he points out, though, was in the 20s and 30s, when a number of dividend-paying stocks were falling, you know, the dividend on it, percentage-wise, went up. When the stock price goes down and they pay the same amount of dividend, well, the yield then, the percentage of the dividend versus the stock price, goes up because the stock price goes down. Ah, but then he goes on to show you how the payouts of the dividends also went down at that time. And, you know, there's no such thing as a free lunch. These high yielding dividend paying stocks that Cramer's trying to find, I don't know that they're going to be able to continue paying their high dividends. For example, Southern Copper Corporation. I talked about how their dividend looked like it was going to be 15-18% even. But their most recent dividend payment is pretty low compared to the previous year's dividend payment. So the yield on the dividend will probably go a lot lower. So even the safety of dividend paying stocks isn't all that safe either. I want to thank you so very much for joining me on this long and breathless edition of the Mad Money Machine, show 135. This is Paul Douglas Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes coming to the dark side to make a Mad Money Machine. I'll see you next week. In the meantime, please visit our advertiser here, Index Funds Advisors. Go to their website, ifa.com. Pick anything there and just read something new. There's so many things out there that are interesting, so many ways to influence your investment decisions. Look along the right-hand side of the three columns on the main page. The new things are generally at the top of that column. Check it every day. There's something new every couple of days there. And it's all good stuff. And I think it'll help you make investment decisions to guide you through this tumultuous markets. The music that I played at the beginning of the show was generated by me using GarageBand and the Apple Loops in there. A lot of fun playing with GarageBand. I'll see you next week. Stay invested in these risky markets.